Hi, welcome to Juice Podcast. I'm Gwen Douglas.
I'm Emily Harmon.
And today we're doing a little exploration of Switzerland.
Yes, as we're missing traveling so much.
Yes.
We thought we'd travel at least in our glasses.
Yeah, and actually I'm really excited for today because I don't know much about Swiss wine and I think no one does.
Yes.
Other than the Swiss.
Yeah. Other than the people making wine in Switzerland. No, I mean, I think definitely now it's harder and harder to find regions that you haven't heard of or places that you don't know. So it's great to still, that they're still out there.
Yeah, and I actually think Switzerland is interesting in terms of like an undiscovered area because so many places that we're now, you know, we say discovered, but like these are regions that have like thousands of years of wine history. The thing that's interesting about Switzerland is that economically they do really well, which is probably why people looking for those gems don't look to Switzerland because you think they don't need it, that they don't need the attention or that they don't need the whatever. And actually like, yeah, I mean, winemaking has also a long history in Switzerland and it's kind of in its own closed little bubble. So it's actually kind of an exciting place to come and look around.
In some ways, it's almost like, I'm just thinking about this now, it almost reminds me a little bit with some of the wines from Austria when they were sort of entering the market because it's not necessarily a wine, like a bulk wine producing region or country.
Which Switzerland isn't either.
Yeah, and then you've got like these sort of higher priced wines.
Exactly.
And that makes it quite difficult for the everyday person to access, I think.
And of course, once like, if you have expensive wines, when you're there, to export them is obviously going to make them
even more expensive.
And sort of what I was reading a little bit about is how, you know, the Swiss palate, apparently, you know, they import a lot of really nice stuff into Switzerland. People have a bit more money there. Mm-hmm. So they can afford to splurge on some fancier bottles from elsewhere, which from what I was reading means that they like to develop winemaking techniques or, you know, they got their own thing going down.
Yeah.
Into the biodynamic. Also a lot of new young winemakers taking over wineries.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's exciting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a lot of women, a lot of young people. Yeah. Trying new stuff.
Yes.
I'm down.
So we've got a selection of wine. I mean, there was some, we've got quite a few. So we're going to just kind of taste along and
try to not get too drunk. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And most of the wines, actually, Gwen, you chose today, and some of them were sent to you, right,
as well? Yes. So some of these are gifts, because I do work in Switzerland sometimes, in Zurich, and most recently in Lausanne for the Montreux, for a wine for a tattoo convention. And so one of them was a gift, the red over here, the Clouse 177, was a gift from a client who's from Bern. He always brings me great wine. I actually think I brought the... He bought me a magnum of the Lugana that I brought for your birthday.
Oh, nice. Yes.
So he always picks nice things. Mm. And this is the last of the three bottles he gave me last time. And I want to shout out to him for also giving me a huge bag of Kegifret, which I love from Switzerland.
What is that?
It's like a wafer. I should have brought some. I'll give you some. I've got a huge stash because of him. It's like a wafer chocolate bar. Mm-hmm. But it's, you can't really get it. You can sometimes get it here in Germany, like at Christmas or on special occasions. But it's just like a wafery, chocolate, crispy, light,
any
delicious.
Caramel in there or anything? No. Okay.
But it's so delicious. And they usually, you can get them in little things that you put by the side of coffee. But I'm all about the Kegifret. So he brings me wine and Kegifret. And then the
sounds like a great guy.
He is fabulous. He is a really nice guy. A veterinarian. And then the other two are from the Vin de Lausanne, which is the Chasselas, and there's another one over there,
the red.
Yeah.
Yes.
That were gifts from my friend Enrico, who is the winemaker, so he made these two wines.
Cool.
Yeah, when he saw that I posted looking to see where I could buy wines in Berlin, he was like, I'll just send you some, which was really nice because then I get to try some stuff that we possibly can't buy here.
Mm.
And I met him while traveling... So sad we can't travel. I met him traveling in Venice a few years ago. Just met on a street corner, my friend Francesca and I, drinking some Prosecco and eating cicetta. And he just came over and introduced himself, bought a bottle, pulled up a piece of sidewalk. And we've been friends now since. So, yeah.
Nice.
Really nice. So I'm excited to try his new wines.
Nice. And then I bought a bottle of Marcus Rook Pinot as well. And then you also organised a bottle of Metopia from More Natural Wine.
Too. Yes, two bottles from More Natural Wine. I also got the Chasselas de la, and then the
Metopia.
You know,
yeah,
Metopia.
Right,
More Natural. Yeah.
So we've already pre-poured our two whites.
So you don't have to either.
Yes, in the right glass, we've got...
The Chasselas de la.
From Julien Guillon. Is that how you say that? Julien Guillon?
Oh, yeah, I'd say Guillon.
Yeah, 2019. And it's interesting because it also says Méthode Agricole de Rudolf Steiner as well. So I'm assuming that they're working biodynamically.
Biodynamically. I actually think nearly everything we have is biodynamic today.
Yes.
I think
well, the one I bought is.
Yeah, I think yeah. all of them. I know that the Vin de Lausanne are, and I would assume if More Natural was selling these two, yeah. they would be. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah. And then, so that's in the first glass. So maybe we'll start with that.
Right.
That.
So this is one of the. I'm really excited actually that we have two Chasselas to try, although I think they're from similar regions. Can't remember. Wrote it all down.
Interesting. I mean, I don't drink a lot of Chasselas, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of these, like, from what I was, from my small amount of research and from the small part that I absorbed, that Chasselas is sort of their, like, their drinky wine. Like, the wine you go to for just for drinking.
Everyday drinking.
Everyday drinking. That it's, like, neutral, from yeah. what I was reading. I mean, it has a smell that makes you want to sort of...
This one smells a little bit like a beer to me.
You know what it smells like? It smells a little bit like the Müller-Thurgau from Schmidt.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But less aromatic.
You're less aromatic. Yeah. But that same, like a little hay. Or
yeah,
little,
I was like, thinking, like, almost like chamomile, actually.
Yeah, actually, that's a... Yeah, it's giving me, like, summer fields.
Yeah. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, dried grass. There's yeah. a herbal edge to
yeah,
it,
totally.
Too.
Yeah, totally. I can totally see this being like a great picnic wine already just by the smell.
And there still is. There's like a little beery edge to it for me. Which...
Yeah, totally. It's like beer foam.
Yes.
Like when you've finished a glass of beer and you smell the glassware.
Yes, like or a beer spittoon at a beer festival maybe. Is anybody using those?
I just love the word spittoon. Such a like cartoon word.
Spittoon. Yeah, because also the sound of you spitting into the bucket would also... Like it's a bit onomatopoeia, isn't it?
Spittoon. Spittoon. I think it's quite savory in the mouth too, actually. I should be spitting. I didn't really eat enough today, but...
I mean, we never usually use the spittoons. I don't know why I'm using it today.
Right, I
because
should.
Because we've got six wines.
Yeah. yeah. She's being more clever than I am. Yeah. But
nice. I mean, it's got nice high acidity. Yeah. Quite fresh. There's a little bit of residual sugar there. Or
a little
something.
Bit. I also would be curious to try it after it's been sitting for a bit.
I was thinking it could go mousy.
I'm curious to see what happens.
Yeah. yeah. I'm assuming there's no sulfur there.
Also, it's not as cold as I would probably like. Yeah. To. I would probably serve it a little colder
yeah.
than I've got it here. But I would say,
yeah,
like...
I'm not sure if it would keep if it was open for multiple days.
Oh, I think
this would be one,
not.
Or it would maybe go a bit green or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, maybe it's... But I don't think you would open this and keep it.
No, just drink it.
Yeah, drink I think it. It's like you'd probably just smash it on the balcony or in yeah. the grass.
Hot day by the lake.
Yeah, I think
it'd be pretty
it's
good.
Kind of a nice, easygoing. It's pretty zingy.
Yeah.
It's got actually a real zing. So I'm really curious to try it, try the other Chasselas to see like...
So the next one, the one that we've got in the next glass is also a Chasselas. And it's from...
This is the Vin de Lausanne one.
Okay. Is that the name of... That's the pretty... Ville de Lausanne. And then...
Oh, Ville de Lausanne.
And then that's Tounou.
Tounou, which means
the
naked.
Name of the wine.
Yeah. Which means naked Chasselas. So it's...
Nice.
Yeah.
And it says Grand Cru Montsorel.
Montsorel, yeah.
Montsorel.
So...
2019.
So I should have asked Enrico before... for my notes. He could have done my homework for me. But I was looking at the... website for Vin de Lausanne, and he obviously made these two, but it looks like from the website that it's like it said publicly owned, so does that mean like the city owns it? It's very confusing,
know.
So I might have to read more on that later,
but maybe it's the premise where he's making the wine is
it's like a group yeah. of estates. It's like five estates or something, and I'm
nice.
Yeah.
So this is also Demeter certified, and it says Bio Swiss. So I'm assuming that's the local
yeah.
organisation there for viticulture or maybe for agriculture. And already it's quite a different style, I would say.
Yeah, curious.
Maybe there's some lees contact on the wine, because it definitely has this kind of more creaminess to it in terms of texture, and there's almost these autolytic.
Totally different.
I like this a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Lovely. Mm.
It feels nice in your mouth. Yeah,
texture. Really good texture. Good acidity, so there's like nice freshness to it. But then this mouthfeel to kind of balance it. It doesn't have... Because the first one for me has some bitterness.
This has a nice long finish.
Definitely almost more complex. More of a... I mean, I'm not sure. I wouldn't know with the winemaking, but I would assume as well. So I think definitely Lee's work.
Possibly
an old barrel, maybe, in the production.
Well, if Enrico ever comes to Berlin, we'll have to have a chat.
Yeah, because
so this is very nice.
Yeah, almost a more Burgundian kind of approach.
Yeah, that's
to
kind
it.
Of, I was like, actually, because the last time I had a Chasselas was in Switzerland, in Lausanne, just at a hotel, and I just had a glass, but I remember the acidity not being that high and not enjoying it. So actually, both of these have been, and it still has the same, like, savory, grassy.
Yeah. No, I really like that. I mean, it's 12.5% alcohol as well, so lower alcohol, but that's delicious.
That's really yum.
Yeah.
And so this grape...
That's the pairing for summer fondue.
Oh, my God. Summer night fondues.
I know.
Summer night. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Delicious. Yeah, I actually... So this grape variety is one of these sort of like most loved, Swiss... Or most known Swiss varieties and most loved, most drank in Switzerland.
Mm.
Being one of their, I reckon, indigenous, if not made in Switzerland.
Yeah, one of their key grapes for sure.
That was really yum.
That's ridiculously yum, actually. It's really
difficult. It's like you have that thing where you're like, it's like
I
a friend's
good.
Like when you have like a friend's band and they're like, hey, you want to come check out my band? And you're like, oh God, I like you so much. I hope it's good. That makes me really happy.
Because you don't want to tell them it's bad.
No, but he's really nice. Yeah. And you know, when I first met him, such passion about winemaking and really, you know, serious, you know. Looking forward to one day having his own winery. So I'm really pumped to taste this and how delicious it is.
I mean, they're crazy different. Like, just going back to that first one, when you smell the first one now, so many dried herbs. It literally smells like dried rosemary, thyme.
Oh, yeah, I can totally...
Really intense. Very herbaceous. Mediterranean pantry herbs. Traveling all over.
Yeah, I guess, like, this one is more, like... I would say this one would be more for like the lovers of really like natty wines. Things that are a bit
more of a challenge.
Yeah, a little odd, a little quirky. Because it definitely has like, for me, the acidity is a little abrasive maybe for my taste.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting sensitive in my old age. But actually, I think on the right day, I would totally smash it. Because that beer quality on a hot summer day, sometimes you get that like...
Yeah.
That bitter finish, like having a Hoegaarden like beer, like a light beer that gives you that little...
Yes.
So for me,
the first Chasselas, the Chasselas de la, that for me is too astringent.
Yeah, that's what I just said. It's too acidic
Too astringent. And I also think there's this natty edge to it where I just feel like it just lacks a little bit of purity and a little bit of balance, actually.
Right.
And
I think, agree, actually.
Yeah, and there's something there where there's this edge of sweetness, just to be really specific.
Yeah.
There's a sweetness there which I think has the potential for this wine to spoil when open too long.
I wonder if that sweetness is also giving it, like in combination with the bitterness, giving it that beer feeling. Because,
with the mouthfeel.
You know, like when I said about smelling the empty glass of beer, you get that like fermented sugar kind of smell.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're right, it does. It feels like an unfinished ferment. So,
interesting.
I mean, I don't know if it is, but like that, their fermentation smells that you're
right.
that we're smelling, those beer smells. So, yeah, it makes sense.
So, maybe that's, I mean, actually, that could be a really great push for people that are really into beer drinking, because I know a lot of people that are super into like Belgian style beers have been getting more into natural wines. And actually, this is the kind of wine that I would maybe serve to someone who's like bridging the gap, you know?
Yes.
Like, moving their way over to wine, this could be interesting for a beer drinker.
Yes. Yeah.
So sometimes it's like not our taste and not for the minute, but I think could be well placed for someone else in the right moment.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, exactly. I would drink that if it was put on the table. I would.
100%, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not as complex is the other one.
Yeah, and just for me, not enjoyable in that same way.
But I actually am really excited that we got to try two totally different Chasselas, because when I was reading about it, oh, I have to drink one of these, hey. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
what a problem to have.
When you were reading about Chasselas.
When I was reading about Chasselas, that, you know, I was imagining that it would be like the Mully tea of Switzerland, like a sort of nondescript. They sort of described it as a like drinky.
For me, it's, I mean, like, I think more kind of neutral than that, no?
I mean, I kind of think, yeah, it's neutral, but it definitely has some character if it's vinified in a particular way. Because I think, like, to bring out the creamy, grassy, I think there are things that can be played with.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to try some with a little bit of skin contact, actually.
Yeah, actually. And I think
give it a bit more texture and,
Excellent. Hiding behind it. It's like we're going to, like, go to battle. We each
have,
like...
I know. We should do it. Well, we've never done a wine battle.
Oh, wine battle.
Is the Metopia in that order for a reason, or...?
Nay.
Okay.
Nay. I burped and said nay at the same time.
Okay. Because I think it could be good to put...
So we were also, like, when we were picking stuff... I mean, we just picked or were gifted stuff. But then when we were looking, there are six wine regions. Wow, look at the colour of that.
Yeah, that's, I think, well, we'll see. It's concerning, that colour, but let's see what happens.
Could have been poorly stored.
Yeah. Do you want to grab an extra glass?
Si.
So, so we've got...
Oh, I now think it was actually the Clos. That's why I was like, oh, maybe that's poorly stored because I stored it, but it's not.
No. You can smell this, quite vegetal, wasn't it, coming out of the glass?
Yeah,
there.
The colour is very brown side.
So we have moved on to red wine now, and we've got four red wines, and the next two are Pinot Noirs. Actually, I think the next three will be Pinot Noirs.
No, the one on the end is not Pinot.
So three Pinots then.
Oh, yeah.
Because I forgot one, about... Remember?
Jeez Louise, we're drowning in Pinots. So yeah, three Pinots and one other one.
And Pinot Noir is like a really important grape.
Yes, totally. So it came to Switzerland from Burgundy because they're really close proximity to each other. So I think when I was reading, it would have ended up in Switzerland. I can't remember if it was 16th or 17th century, but it's been there a long time. So yeah, it definitely has like a...
It smells like sauerkraut. with a very concerned face. That's okay.
Talk about why that would happen because that it's not always anyone's fault. I mean, it's someone's fault. But
so we've got, first off, let's start with 2017 Pinot Noir Kletgau from Marcus Rook. So this is the wine that I bought, and I have tried these wines a couple of times, but don't know them in any depth, but just know him and also the next one that you bought, the Metopia, being like some of the most, I guess, highly regarded producers in Switzerland. Like,
they're the ones that get out more. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. And they're the ones, you know, in London, these guys are building up quite a reputation, newcomer imports.
Yeah, cool.
Both of them.
Okay, cool. Because that's actually something that I also wrote down, was that, you know, there's a reason we don't know anything about Swiss wine. Only between 1-2% of Swiss wines are exported outside of Switzerland, which is like nothing. And 60% of that 1-2% ends up in Germany. So the number two is England and the USA being third. Oh, and Japan, sorry. Japan and USA being third and fourth. So, of course, if there are a couple that are making it out into the world, they would be the ones that that we hear about.
So Marcus Rook, originally from Switzerland, moved back to Switzerland in 2007, set up his own winery, 3 hectares in total. Kletgau, the name of this wine, is named after the valley where he's located.
Okay.
So it's a blend. I think this is a blend of multiple parcels, which is why it's got that name. Or small parcels. And working completely biodynamically, again, as we said, it seems to be common.
Yeah, I think the trend is in Switzerland, maybe much like Austria, where they just sort of took on these, they're like, yeah, cool new stuff, we're on it. Yeah. They've got the money, the time. Actually, that's something I was reading about, is that because so many of the people taking over wineries, they don't have to. It's like comfortable. The winemaking becomes like a labor of love rather than like a money-making operation where they have more time and money to spend on it than like other winemakers that are maybe...
In other regions.
Yeah, right, or other countries that are maybe struggling a little more with this.
So in this region anyway, there are around 400 hectares under vines. He's got three So just under 1%. Oh. So you can see he's a small producer, but it's not a huge region. It's very small. And the vineyards are based on clay limestone, but heavily limestone rich soils. So quite similar to what you see in Pinot Noir, yeah. Other Pinot Noir regions. And he's using only Swiss clones, not French clones.
Oh, interesting.
Because
cool.
because of his view is that those clones are more adapted to the climate.
Absolutely,
and
sure,
the
right.
and the terroir there.
Yeah. I also wanted to say earlier about Lausanne being this, like, when we're talking about terroir, because is this the one that's from more north?
So Kletgau, and so this is near to Schaffhausen, which is very close to the German border, not far from Lake okay. Constance, Bodensee.
So then would it be like a cooler, is it cooler there in that area, you think?
I think maybe compared to some of the other wines that we're coming from. Yeah. And I think obviously, like anything, the decision of when the winemaker decides to pick the soil type and and how the altitude and the slope and
cool, because I'm then curious to see the other, because I know that Lausanne, when I was reading also, they say that it's like the area of three sunshines, that you get the lake, the sun and the hot rocks, that you end up with a lot of warmth. That maybe is different. I don't know Switzerland so well.
Yeah.
But this is a conundrum. It smells so different to how it tastes because it smells like cherry candy to me.
Yeah, it does. I mean,
like,
for me...
Like, it's crazy.
And it does have almost a Burgundian approach to it because you've got that lovely cherry fruit. There's this aromatic floral edge, but at the same time, there's that pencil shaving note.
It sort of doesn't have the leafiness. That's the... It's sort of missing that on the nose. Mm-hmm. But it hits you in the mouth.
Yeah.
It's almost smoky.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and that, like I said, that graphite pencil kind of note. Palate's lovely.
Yeah, really.
High acidity, very fine tannin.
I love that little smoky.
And you know that tannin's also, I think it's also coming from a bit of wood.
Yeah.
But it feels like high quality wood. I didn't check. I'm actually not that interested in, wood processes in wineries, but... So that was just laziness on my side, or lack of maybe being a bit despondent about that. But yeah, I think there's, from my experience, I think there's definitely some high quality wood there, probably.
Yeah,
old,
it's just that used. Little like. Yeah. I mean, this is a yum. I imagine suddenly like small game on a grill, like on a Japanese grill or something, like
That'd
a little
amazing.
Like. Yeah, pigeon or grouse or quail. Yeah, all of these little...
I've eaten a lot of quail this year.
But that's what that made me think of. I want it... You could totally stand up to a little barbecue because of that little wood end bitter finish.
Yeah, I agree. Anything grilled or smoky would be nice. This
but then,
too intense.
Yes, like light meats. Yeah. Yum. That made me hungry.
And apparently the approach to winemaking here is minimal intervention. So I think, no filtration fining, small amounts of sulfur at bottling, obviously just to keep the wine clean.
Yeah, right.
And I know that this area, like some of the parcels that he's working with date back to the 14th century.
Wow,
so
amazing.
It's definitely, there's an established wine culture and wine growing culture in this area.
Well, this is also something I wanted to touch on because Switzerland is so close to Burgundy, I think it's really interesting to note how the wineries have survived over time because they're similar ages in terms of, since stuff came from Burgundy. But then we know with Burgundy that parcels are split up often into tinier and tinier pieces as people inherit, whereas the opposite is true in Switzerland, where you're not allowed to split up wineries. There's so many laws to protect wineries staying whole. So like if you inherit a winery, you can't split it up into three parcels between you and your brothers and sisters. It has to remain the same. So all three can own it and operate together, but you can't chop it up.
I don't know if that's good or not. I think it's good.
I think it's
bad.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's like I'd like to ruminate on that a little bit.
Yeah, so I actually think like that is interesting in the sense that like things don't get split up. But, most of these people, from what I was looking at, the people inheriting now, it's not their main sources. They're not forced to. Now also women can take over wineries, which also wasn't historically happening in Switzerland.
Yeah, right. Because, the women's rights were pretty
slow and
pretty later.
Like, it wasn't until, the 70s or something that women could even vote in Switzerland, which is really late considering how we view Switzerland.
Also for a country located where it is as well,
yeah,
you
totally.
Would think.
Yeah, I think, but that's what's really interesting about Switzerland in terms of language, culture. They are kind of in their own, they're kind of an island close to all these European countries, but really with their own minds. their own language, their own... I mean, Swiss German is fascinating.
Impossible to understand.
I know, but fascinating linguistically, because it's like not... It's like not a thing. It has no written form. It's really an interesting place.
Yes.
So that was delicious.
Now on to the next
one. I'm a bit concerned now. We're both...
I'm a bit concerned.
We're both
too.
Concerned.
So the next one we've got is Metopia, and it's Pino or Pino, because it's the pi sign with N-O underneath. And I don't know... it's 14, the vintage.
Aha.
And it's labelled Heroic Alpine Wine just there as well. I wonder if it's also the age. Maybe it's just past it. So let's have a look.
We might have just missed the boat on this one.
Yeah. So it's 14.
The colour's really like on the... verging on brown.
Yeah, I mean,
brown.
It is. It's very brown. I would say garnet, yes.
I'm like, it's very brown.
It has got a bricky colour for sure.
That's the nice way to say brown.
And when you do pour it, I mean, I actually kind of like the smell of sauerkraut, but I don't like it in wine. But it's very dominating.
Yes, it's very dominating.
There is definitely a vegetal edge to it. And I don't know, because I haven't tried this vintage of this wine very much.
Whether it differs so much from the original style.
Yeah, and how also like what's it like when it's a new vintage, right? So
but you know sometimes that sauerkraut, I don't know, we'll have to see what it tastes like. But
yeah.
You can work with all kinds of things.
But yeah, quite vegetal on the nose. I would say behind that there's kind of like this smokiness.
It does have some like fruit buried deep in the back there. Kind of reminds me of like the jars of Italian cherries, not the maraschino, but the other kinds of cherries, the more fermented ones.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy because I was only smelling it before and now I've tasted it. And it is much better on the palate.
Oh, it's very smoky. Mm.
Big smokiness, yeah. And these guys are also organic. The soils are different here. Calcareous schist. And Pinot Noir is 70% of what they produce as well. Did you get any extra info on Metopia that you wanted to talk about or...? I know that the winery was set up in 2004.
I know nothing.
The vignoles were conventional and then they were converted. And the producer actually said that the vignoles didn't start to really, come back until, I think, 2012.
Oh,
there was a lot of work in really replenishing the soil because it was so depleted from chemical farming.
She knows more than I do. I'm glad she does. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's... It disappears a little. The finish isn't so long.
Mm. The nose is very unappealing.
Yes.
Right? Which is, for me, one of the things I love the most about wine. But what I would say is it really does... I do really enjoy it on the palate.
I think mixing it with, like... Dude, eat it with Austrian food then. Something with, like, a heavy caraway seed and cabbage. Go for it. Don't fight it. Roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cabbage roll with it. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
For those of you listening on audio, you just missed out on some moves, some dance moves.
It's like the dad joke moves. Woohoo! Cabbage roll with it.
Yeah. But I think, I actually like it on the palate. And I was really worried because of when we first
opened
it.
She worried me too, yeah.
Yeah, well, with the colour and the smell, I was like, oh my God, this wine's oxidised, it's over. Yeah. But on the palate, the tannins are lovely. There's a density to the tannins, but there's a fineness to the tannins. Yeah. There's a smokiness, there's a meatiness on the palate.
But it's still very delicate.
And there's still a hint of the sauerkraut, but it's not dominant like it is on the nose.
No, you don't taste it as much as you smell.
Yeah.
Mouth breathe when you're drinking it. Sorry.
I'm going to try and do that. Okay. Yes, because, I don't know how to time that.
I know, because like smelling is such a big... it's basically why I got interested in wine at all.
Actually...
It totally changes the experience.
If you do that... So I did it. So I inhaled and then I exhaled and then I drank the wine and then I breathed in.
But actually...
And it was delicious.
But I wonder whether that's like... Now fun. I'm like, I mean, this is the kind of stuff you can manipulate with glassware, right?
Yeah.
Then you just put it in a glass that has a smaller mouth opening so that you're...
No, but then that might concentrate.
Oh, yeah. Or something very open.
Yeah.
Play around with that.
Just put it in a tumbler.
Yeah. I'm joking. Just plug your nose. No, I'm kidding.
You know those earplugs? You can just reuse them.
Yeah.
But actually...
Put your swimmer's nose on.
No, but if you do try again in the way that you said... I'm really aware of my breathing.
The thing that's really funny is like the cabbage smell is kind of interesting because you know sometimes like we have that initial thought but you can like change your perception of what the cabbage is, because I actually think if you like when I smell it again the cabbage thing could also be like that very dried raisiny smell with a little pharmacy smell. Dried raisin in the medicine cabinet.
True. I think all three of those things are there. But yes.
So like, just change it. Like, if yeah. I think less about cabbage.
I still think the sauerkraut thing is there because you get it on the
totally.
Finish.
It's so like.
But I think those other notes are yeah. there too. There's definitely this medicine yeah. cabinet thing, and that's the development as yeah. well, right? Like, quite an extreme natty wine right. that's 8 years old.
From 2014, yeah.
8 years old, 7 years old.
Shit, that's a long time. Yeah. 7 years. Man, time flies.
Hmm.
Yeah, really interesting.
But I have to say, that trick with the mouth breathing where you don't smell it is to actually... I know it's really bad, but it's actually changed it for me because yeah, totally. It's actually really enjoyable on the palate. Really
fascinating,
palate.
Right? Yeah. Actually, that would be an interesting, like, blind taste day. No nose. The no nose blind taste. I imagine, like, I'm always choking on food and drink at home. That would be the episode I would choke, for sure.
I think as well, because when you're not smelling it, especially if you hold yeah. your nose, because you know there's this test that they do. Mm. They do. So they. When I mean they, I mean...
the man.
There's a test that you can do. The man. They. Him. Yeah. Man. One. But yeah, yeah, so if you hold your nose and then you put something in your mouth, food or drink, and then... food or drink.
Specific.
Put it in your mouth and then do this and then... let's say it's wine, swirl it around, and then you let go and breathe out of your nose, you get this like hit of like how you taste, because you know
very it's interesting, yeah.
the olfactory response, so like getting a more heightened olfactory response, because you've got that difference between not having it to having it.
Yeah, it's like the contrast becomes yeah. much greater.
And that's
greater.
Quite interesting to do that with that wine.
Yeah. I mean, I would buy it again, mostly because it's kind of interesting, and I would yes. be curious to see what other vintages taste like, because we've kind of gone like... way to the back into the archives yes. rather than maybe tasting this one a bit fresher.
Yeah.
So one to revisit.
Definitely.
Oh, burp. Excuse me.
That was quite a dramatic kind of chest movement then, wasn't it?
I'm going to try that one again.
Mm. I mean, that's an interesting line.
It's like growing on me, actually.
Yeah, because it's funny, there is like almost a touch of oxidation because there is a faint nuttiness, but the structure of the wine and the intensity of the wine is still very much there.
It totally has, and now I'm like getting more medicine cabinet bloody. Band-aid.
Yeah, maybe there's a bit of Brett there, but I think it could be the...
I think there is a tiny bit.
Yeah.
It has a bit of that like...
germaline.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's funny because I really was like, oh no.
But there's much more to talk about it, even though it's...
Yeah, and also I feel like that's a bottle of wine because it's changing a lot in the glass, but in an interesting way.
It's an experience.
Yeah, I think I would drink that bottle of wine quite quickly, actually.
Because you'd be trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's actually funny that you say that because we did it a couple times where we did some tastings with friends where everyone brings a covered bottle and then you have to drink it the whole time covered, though. Horrible. Do not recommend it. Because you end up just getting so smashed because you can't, everyone's trying to figure it out. Everyone's trying to best the other. And then you're like, just going for it instead of like, I'm just enjoying myself. It becomes the entire focus. Very stressful.
My 28th birthday was like that. I think we were 16 people having dinner. This is when you could be 16 people having dinner.
And
then we all bought wines, but we did them all blind.
It would stress me out.
But also because... like some bottles we only had one of, so you had like everyone bought like at least two bottles.
Oh shit!
So you had like sometimes literally this much. You'd just be like, "Well, no, you just shot it," because you'd have like just a taste, and then you'd be like, "Next wine, please." So we were just, we were so drunk by the end of it, but it was amazing.
Because when it's just a little sip, you're like, "No, it's just a sip." You put the whole thing in your mouth rather than
whole thing in your mouth. Yeah.
Yes. The episode is going to be called Freudian. Yeah. Slips.
The innuendo episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting, both of these. It's funny to go back to the other one now after.
I mean, the other one seems like super fruity now, doesn't it?
I know, it's like... yeah, funny. So actually, really, it shows often when we go back and try things that the order is really important.
Context is everything.
Yes.
For everything.
Actually, it's funny, because what was it? It's not the did I just have a stroke? It's not Briggs-Myers. It's the other one that's like the... anyway, context is my number one superpower, apparently.
Really?
It's apparently very important in my understanding of the world around me. Context.
Yeah, but I think that's vital because context is everything. It's like I was saying this as well in terms of like every time there's a situation, it, like even it, like intention, the right. context of it,
everything
the
changes
meaning behind
everything.
It. Like you can actually, it's there's no
because there is no one truth.
Exactly,
there's only context.
Exactly,
because depending on where you're standing,
there's
looking
many
at the
truths.
Truth. Exactly, there's no one truth.
Yeah.
So yeah, context. So actually, it's really nice sometimes to go back and forth and see what's up.
I agree.
So now we're going to try this, the gifted Plus 177. And when I was Googling, as we do before an episode, this one, in some areas it says Baselland AOC. And then other places say it's like basically Jura, Switzerland. So I don't know what's right. It's I don't know enough about geography in Switzerland to complete. Oh yeah, I got to. All right.
Let's can this one. One yeah.
Interesting to see. I lost my train of thought.
Baselland.
Oh yeah. I mean, I looked on the map, and I guess they're basically next to each other. It's like bordering. So where this wine is from is bordering on Jura.
So the wine that we're drinking, just for everybody that's listening, is the 2018 Clus 177 Pinot Noir Reserve.
Yeah. So it's also biodynamic, I think, or at least bio. It's Demeter.
Yep. Demeter as well. And then this is Umstellen, which looks like another
Swiss.
Kind of, yes. So it's biologic. And so I guess that's probably the organic certification and that's local. And then there's also the biodynamic certification.
So it's another Pinot, but now from a different area. So actually it's going to be interesting to see what's up.
Yes.
If this is more on the, like, do the styles cross borders? I mean, it's way, it already smells like it's going to pucker in the cheeks a little more.
Mm. I mean, it's definitely more similar in style to the Marcus Rook.
Agreed.
Already. Because again,
fruitier and...
And you see a little bit that, again, that kind of lead pencil. Mm-hmm. I said graphite before, but lead pencil, like or pencil shaving kind of note on the nose.
Mm. Yeah. But
and
it
cherry fruit,
juicy.
Almost a little bit more kind of like, I want to say... A little bit of bramble.
Mm. This is one that kind of tastes like how it smells.
Mm. Nice on the palate. Definitely more brambly on the palate. Mm-hmm. Almost raspberry.
But I actually think the pencil shavings also carries yeah. over to the... There's a little wood, yeah.
A little bit more fruitiness than the Rook.
Yeah. Agreed.
A little bit more that's ripeness, okay. but nice.
But also still like zingy and...
Yeah. There's kind of like a clarity to the fruit.
Yeah.
Like it feels more defined in some ways.
Right. I agree.
But a little
that.
Bit, I think, I wish I'd tried the wines before because actually I would have served that before the Metopia.
Right.
Because I think after that Metopia where there's a lot of intensity on the palate, this but feels a bit more simple.
But it might take us somewhere,
ready
it might help for
one.
The next one because we didn't know, it's sort of hard to tell how to put them in order.
Yeah.
Also with the age, you know, we've got things that might work in that order if they weren't aged so much or... And we don't know.
Hmm.
And also the grape on the end I've never had before.
No.
Because it's a hybrid from Switzerland. So who knows?
And
this is
do we have
delicious.
Any info on this? Clues?
Clues. I mean, all I had basically was
do we have
that
a clue
it's...
on this?
No. Basically, the... I just Googled where it was. Because
okay.
we had a lot to contend with today.
Yeah.
But yeah. So another, I think in the same thing where they also, yeah, just vibing. This seems to be the Swiss vibe, a bit juicy.
Yeah, but definitely like more brambly. And there's like a herbal element to this wine that wasn't in the others. And but almost like a licorice or some kind of spice there as well. Licorice, raspberry bush.
It's interesting because like...
Drawn by pencil.
No, they're all peanut. All Pinots, and geographically very close to some very famous French regions. I do feel like they're really having their own thing going on.
Mm.
Like, I don't think you would necessarily confuse these for being...
Burgundy, for
no,
example.
No, at all.
Mm. If any, this one, the Rook, maybe.
Okay. Just because it's...
But they do have that... You're right, they have their own...
A bit juicy, a bit like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a different expression.
Yeah, different
sure.
character.
Yeah.
Which I'm... Actually, I'm really happy that we chose so many. Maybe we don't know so much about each of the wines today. but it's giving me actually a nice sense of
place.
Yeah, character and like what the identity of Swiss wine is versus some other regions. I mean, to be next door, neighbors to Jura and to Burgundy, this is some tough acts to follow. So it's interesting to see that they're not trying to mimic, that they're really just doing their own thing.
Yep.
Now I know if I want a juicy, fresher kind of Pinot, I'm going to look for Switzerland.
12.6%.
I mean, none of these are really that light in alcohol, right?
Well, 12.6%. It's quite light.
Is it?
For a red,
oh,
yes.
Oh, yeah, for a red, okay.
Yeah, like this. So the Metopia was 12. The Marcus Rook, 12.5. And this is 12.6, which is, I'm guessing you were given that straight from Switzerland. Because I think it's an illegal label with 12.6 written on it.
Oh, really?
Should be to the 0.5.
To the 0.5. Maybe Switzerland's more...
Well, in the EU...
Because I was going to say, I bet you Switzerland's more...
Yes.
Because they, you know, timepieces and whatnot and time, you know, they're really like, no, we're more exact.
Yes.
More exactly. yeah. Interesting.
Mm.
Lots to discover, actually. Yes. I'm actually, like, getting excited about
the possibility to go to Switzerland one day.
I know, again. Because I really enjoy going to Switzerland.
Yes.
The few times that I've been. Hmm. Lovely. Very nice.
Yes. So, last wine is the Ville de Lausanne again.
And Rouge Saint Phare, Gamaret Naturel. So it's
It's Grand Cru Alamin.
Alamin.
2018.
Yeah. 14.7.
Yeah.
Oh la la. That's why you put him on the end.
Yes.
So this is also made by my friend Enrico. And I just Googled a little bit about the grape because I'd never heard of the grape, Gamaret. And it's been, I guess it's around since the 1970s. It was a crossing done in the 70s, which is a cross between Gamay and Reichensteiner, which I also know nothing about. So I'm actually also...
Rolls off the tongue, that one, doesn't it?
I don't know why there's some German words that make you just want to yell them. Reichensteiner!
Too many films where there's German.
Too much yelling, I know. It's the way they
Hollywood influences us all.
It's true. The villains are always German or English. It's true, right?
Yeah, and it's always an American. I don't wanna be a hero.
Like American that song. Hero. Sorry, that song, every time I hear it, it's the song that if I'm like walking badly in heels, or if I see someone else walking badly in heels, it's the song and I do like a troll walk. Because like, even though Tina Turner has like walked in Manolo Blahniks her entire life, she doesn't master it.
In that,
it's a bit of a stompy, or it's a look, it's just a vibe.
Maybe it's just,
I need another
hero. Oh, I don't want to be another hero.
The remix.
Yeah.
So the color on this is, I mean, verging on more purpley. This is definitely a more purple, black, very dark red.
Yes, it is. Quite spicy, lots of baked spices on the nose.
There's something also sort of bready about it.
Yeah, there's something nutty. I think there could be possibly a touch of oxidation here.
Maybe also...
And ripeness.
Mm.
It's got a little bit of this kind of... sweet almond marzipan kind of note.
Totally.
Which is oxidation, usually.
I mean, it's not unpleasant.
But when I say oxidation, not as in the wine from the bottle is oxidized, it could be just like that there was an amount of oxygen. It can be really subtle, but if you're not working with any sulfur, some red grapes can be used to it.
This is very interesting. Hmm. It's way more floral than I actually expected it to be.
Pretty intense on the palate, isn't it?
Bam.
Yeah. Kind of get these tannins up front, which are lip covering, and the alcohol, but then you've kind of got this
kind of dissipates.
Silkiness after.
Mm. There's something sort of violet about it. Like
definitely.
Mm. It was kind of a like surprise on the mouth, to be honest. That's why I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
I mean,
Food pairing?
Yeah, that's what I'm like, actually reading my mind. I'm like running through what I might, I mean, I feel like, I mean, a steak, like a, just a big old steak.
Yeah, or something kind of stewy.
It needs something like
goulash.
The goulash, I feel like maybe all that sweetness from the peppers is like too sweet.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a like I just want to smoke cigars and drink it.
I mean, that's also a pairing.
Yeah.
Not a food pairing, but it's an occasion pairing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know whether
I don't love this, if I'm honest.
Yeah, that's okay. I think it's a tough one to
place
in a...
There's a leafiness there as well.
I find it interesting because
it's
really
different. I can't think of an occasion when I would personally drink it. But obviously I know we need to look at things in broader terms than that.
That's what I'm thinking, like, yeah, cigar, like poker night.
Mm.
But the sort of like, it's a really...
Wow.
It just has like a different... I'm trying to sort of like figure it out, actually.
I mean, the shape of the wine is completely different to the wines we've been trying before.
Yeah.
You know, it's 14.5% alcohol.
Look at the
legs
on this bitch.
There's still good... Yeah. I mean, there's still... What I will say is there's still good acidity there. So there is some
ageability?
Balance.
You think this is maybe something that might soften with age, or you think it's like...
I think it could soften with age. I don't know if the wine's going to get more complex or more interesting,
fair enough.
Though.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's good to also...
Yeah. But I think...
Yeah, I'm really like...
I don't know if it needs to soften either, because it's not like incredibly tannic and dense. It's not like Cabernet, for example.
Right. I mean, this is maybe something... I mean, maybe this is the kind of wine you have after dinner, you know? Like when there's just like some dark chocolate laying around on the table and you've got the cards out and the cigarettes come out right after dinner and you're just kind of like chilling and you could have a cognac or something on the side and it would be like... I mean, I'm a double fister after dinner. I like a little...
we'll drink a 14.5% bottle of red and have some cognac on
Yeah, but I could see it. Poker night? Come on.
Cigar as well.
Yeah. That's a vibe all on its own.
It is.
And I think actually if you had a like a spirit on the side of this, it wouldn't fuck it up too much.
Yeah.
You'd still be like... Bleh. It's a...
I mean...
Not for the lighthearted.
There's an English saying, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah. This is a go for it.
2 feet in.
This is the go big or go home.
Gwen's like, why would I jump off the low diving board? I'm going to the temperature every time.
I can't swim. Jokes on everyone else around the pool.
Yeah, just has the life ring around her when she goes out.
It's up to you guys to save me. Yeah, I don't know. I just actually, I'm going to have to ponder this one for longer than we have to sit here.
Yeah.
Because I think...
But that's been great. Like, it's so nice to try them. It's also nice to try a different varietal, right?
Totally.
Well.
I think that's the... And there are actually other varietals in Switzerland that I'd be interested to try. But I think we have to go to Switzerland.
We do.
So, hey, wines of Switzerland.
We're ready.
You guys want to talk about yourselves outside of Switzerland? We're ready for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
This has been great fun.
It has. Until
next time. So you can find us on Instagram at juice.podcast.
And on Twitter at juice_podcast. And individually, you can find Gwen at Gwen Douglas on both Instagram and Twitter.
Yes, everywhere. And Emily Harmon at Vina Lupa.
Yeah, so just Vina Lupa.
Yeah, at Vina Lupa. We'll just write it down so you don't get confused by what we're saying. And yeah, until next time.
Gamma ray.
Yeah. Wee.
Capital.